Over the Edge, Float and Bloat by Larry Vardaman. Mainly because of the quality of the food eaten by the rafters and the ease with which they view the canyon, the portion of our tours which takes rafts down the Colorado River has become known as the Float and Bloat contingent. The companies which provide the rafting service typically feed the raft group steak, shrimp, Mexican fajitas, spaghetti, and other incredible feasts as they drift downstream during the week. Even during the day, the rafting companies offer snacks and drinks whenever a guest desires one. In addition, if one wishes, he need only step off the bus at Lee's Ferry below Lake Powell and into the raft, float all the way down the Colorado, the river to near Lake Mead, climb out of the raft, and then ride in an air-conditioned van out of the canyon. Of course, most of our tour participants are much more active than that and only care to take our raft trip halfway to cut their time and cost in the canyon. The two primary options are for our guests to travel on the raft from Lee's Ferry and walk up Bright Angel Trail to Grand Canyon Village at the end of the trip, or to walk down the Bright Angel Trail to meet the raft as it empties for the beginning of their trip and take the van out of the canyon at Lake Mead. Each of these trips is about 5 days, and the cost is about half of that for rafting the entire distance. Unfortunately, those who take the second half miss the wonderful fellowship at the Victory Banquet, but they get to experience several of the best rapids on the river. During the raft trip, there are optional day hikes up the side canyons to view geological formations. Some of these day hikes can be quite rigorous. In particular, on the upriver portion of the raft trip, the trek to view the folded strata of the Kaibab Upwarp, and on the downriver portion, the hike up Havasu Canyon to swim in the beautiful blue-green waterfall pools on the Havasupai Indian Reservation require fairly good stamina. If one stays only in the raft and floats down the river, he'll miss a major portion of the enjoyment of the canyon. So floating and bloating is really a misnomer, but the backpackers can't help but denigrate the rafters for the apparent luxury they believe the rafters enjoy. We've sponsored about a dozen raft trips down the Colorado River since the Grand Canyon Tour began in the early 1980s. Steve Austin floated the river the first time in 1980 by invitation from Art Chadwick, a biologist with Loma Linda University. Steve had just moved into a new apartment when he received a call from Dr. Chadwick asking if he would like to join the Loma Linda group at 4 a.m. the next morning for a trip through the canyon. Because a trip down the Colorado is a once-in-a-lifetime dream for most geologists, Steve immediately said yes, even though it took him several hours of searching to find his equipment in the jumble of his recent move. This raft trip later convinced Steve that a similar experience should eventually become a part of the Grand Canyon tour. Probably the most significant aspect of the raft trip is the impressive view of the geological strata one experiences on the way through the canyon. As one floats downstream, he drifts past a sequence of rock layers which occur in similar order, as if one were to hike down one of the trails. However, in this case, the rafter has the opportunity to study them slowly as they go by, unencumbered with the exertion of carrying a pack and hiking long distances. It's amazing how rocks can lose their charm, except for a committed geologist, when one becomes tired and sweaty from physical activity. This doesn't happen on the raft. You can simply lie back and watch as rock layer after rock layer emerges in the canyon ahead, passes slowly alongside the raft, and disappears to the rear. As you proceed down the canyon, these rock layers seem to rise from the earth and loom over you. You're able to see these layers from numerous perspectives as you transverse the canyon. As the river works its way downhill, it cuts through the Kaibab Upwarp, a mound of rock strata which was folded upward sometime in the past, through which the canyon was eroded. The rock strata, which originally formed in horizontal layers, were tilted upward by the movement of the crust along a line north-south through the park near Desert View Tower. The carving of the canyon allows the rafter to observe these layers inclined upward toward the west as he floats downstream, very much like driving past a large road cut through a mountain. To be more specific, we teach that the canyon was formed by the catastrophic failure of a natural dam, which held back the waters of several large lakes impounded upstream in Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. We believe the evidence is sufficient to show that water impounded upstream in at least two large lakes contained 1,000 cubic miles of water, carved the canyon rapidly when a section of the Kaibab upwork failed. One of these historical lakes, called Hopi Lake, filled the depression now covering northeastern Arizona in the watershed of the Little Colorado River. The Kaibab upwork forming the dam failed just east of Desert View Tower near the present junction of the Little Colorado and the Colorado River. Shortly after this event, a second natural dam near Page, Arizona failed, releasing a second giant lake that filled a depression which now includes Lake Powell. This second lake, called Canyonlands Lake by Dr. Austin, would have been deeper than Lake Powell and would have extended upstream into the Four Corners regions, covering Monument Valley, the Grand Canyon, Marble Canyon, and the Canyon of the Little Colorado formed by the erosive action of water pouring over and through the failure points. The erosion began at the failure point and worked its way upstream. This type of erosion is called downcutting, and is similar to what is still occurring slowly today at Niagara Falls. The exact mechanism for the initial failure through the Kaibab upwork to start the flow through the Grand Canyon is still being investigated. The mechanism is thought to be either overtopping or piping through underground fissures in the strata. Dr. Austin prefers the piping theory because of evidence which has been found for numerous underground caverns and channels in the Redwall Limestone, in many of which water still flows today. The topography of the Grand Canyon, with its narrow inner gorge and wide amphitheater-shaped side canyons, seems to cry out for massive flows of water in the past, which produced rapid erosion, rather than a slow erosion by a trickle of water over a very long period of time. The Colorado River exhibits what is called in geologic terminology a relic landform, one which was formed in the past and has not changed significantly since its formation. We teach that the Grand Canyon was probably carved within a few hundred years after the Genesis flood. Some of the layers would have already hardened into rock, others would have still been unconsolidated and somewhat soft. In addition to the ease in which the canyon can be viewed by the rafter, one other useful benefit to the raft trip is its convenience for carrying heavy loads into and out of the canyon. The collection of rock specimens for chemical analysis from formations in the canyon was always a challenge until we began the raft trips. Now, when rock samples are collected under permit by Dr. Austin or other associated geologists, they can be carried by the raft and easily transported home to get San Diego for analysis. The largest load we've carried in the rafts, however, in addition to the people and their personal gear, was the equipment needed in 1993 and 94 to produce the videotape on the geology of the Grand Canyon. We contracted with Jeremiah Films Incorporated to produce a creationist documentary during the 1993 raft trip. Randy Ide, a professional video producer and cameraman, was subcontracted by Jeremiah Films to join the raft group those years and obtain footage of the canyon, as well as recording interviews and activities for production of the video. Randy brought with him a $50,000 network production video system, which was composed of a Sony Beta camera, a recording deck, a tripod, and batteries. In addition to the primary camera system, Randy had a backup video camera and all of his personal equipment. All this special equipment, which weighed close to 100 pounds, was no problem to float through the canyon and retrieve when the trip was over. However, when outcrops and interviews needed to be filmed upside canyons away from the river, a transport of the camera system became a major operation. Steve Tecklenburg, a friend of ICR, volunteered to carry the heavier parts of the camera system to the field locations. Steve is about 6.5 feet tall and weighs over 240 pounds. He was able to carry the camera, tripod, and recording deck all by himself. However, he was challenged by a trek to the 60-mile formation. This was a site about 5 miles up a side canyon and over 3,000 feet above the elevation of the river. The site is significant because of the rock material of which it is composed and the evidence it contains for rapid catastrophic formation. Because of the remoteness of this site, it's likely that we've packed the video camera farther than anyone else into the backcountry of the Grand Canyon to produce a video. Because of his efforts for ICR in this project, Steve Tecklenburg has become known by the 1993 and 94 rafters as the Pack Mule. When Steve Tecklenburg and his father Paul again floated the river a couple of years later in 1996, he wore a t-shirt with the words Pack Mule printed on it. His father wore a t-shirt with the words Father of Pack Mule imprinted on his. Since Steve didn't have camera equipment to carry around that year, he volunteered to pack a hammer, a chisel, and rock samples, which Andrew Snelling collected from layers and ledges high above the river. Because in 1993, less than an hour after the rafts launched from Lee's Ferry, the $50,000 camera quit working, it took 2 years to acquire the footage necessary for our video production. One of the circuit boards on the camera malfunctioned, and no repair was possible in the field. Randy Ide was forced to document the activities with his backup camera, which was of insufficient quality to be used for the production. The humor of the situation was not apparent to the group at the time. Here was a professional video producer equipped with the best video system money could buy and provided with a floating platform in the Colorado for 10 days and a mule to carry his equipment, reduced to recording lectures and hikes like any other tourist with a camera purchased at a chain store. Randy returned in 1994 to successfully complete the project. His work can be seen in the video Grand Canyon, Monument to the Flood. The cover of this video can be easily identified by the beautiful picture on the jacket of a group of ICR rafters heading off downstream in a raft with the canyon dwarfing the scene. This documentary features 5 creationist geologists, Steve Austin, John Morris, Andrew Snelling, Van Burbach, and Kurt Wise, on location, discussing features of the canyon which support its recent catastrophic formation, rather than an ancient uniformitarian process. A major portion of the production cost was covered by generous donations from the 1994 raft group. This successful video has justified all the effort and expense which went into its production. Of course, many people, the geology of the Grand Canyon is secondary to the thrill of riding the rapids on the Colorado River. The Colorado River between Lee's Ferry and Lake Mead contains some of the best whitewater rafting in the world. Thousands of people raft, kayak, or boat the Colorado each summer simply for the thrill of challenging the rapids. John Wesley Powell was the first white man to lead an expedition on the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon. In 1869, Powell traversed the canyon in specially built wooden boats. He traveled the entire 200 miles of the Grand Canyon without prior knowledge of the rapids or waterfalls which lay ahead. Prior to this, even Native Americans who knew the area avoided the river, recognizing the canyon's formidable, insurmountable cliffs. Powell's intent was to map this wild section of the new Western Territories for the U.S. Geological Survey. Each turn in the river, each sound of rushing water ahead, could spell disaster for his men. The inner gorge in particular, with its narrow vertical walls and dark recesses, seemed to invite catastrophe. The next rapids could be waterfall for all they knew. Would the river simply disappear into the bowels of the earth, taking the entire group with it into oblivion? Powell started with over a dozen men, but three were killed during the exploration of the canyon. Two gave up to walk out just before the final stretch of river. They were never seen again. Of course, the river had not been dammed when Powell made his run, and his boats were much more likely to swamp or overturn than those used today. A reenactment of Powell's famous trip on the Colorado River may be seen at the IMAX Theater near Grand Canyon Village. Today's Colorado River runner typically rides in either a large rubber raft, a kayak, or a newly designed boat similar to John Wesley Powell's. Each of these designs allows for a much safer passage through the rapids. Today's raft groups float the Colorado River on rubber rafts, provided by one of the several groups in Arizona. They are typically made from Army surplus pontoon boats, which have been modified to hold large quantities of food, equipment, and people. They're powered by 75 horsepower outboard motors. Each raft normally holds about 15 riders, including the boatman, so the group is composed of two or three rafts floating down the river together. The raft companies provide almost all necessities for each person. They provide and prepare all the meals, provide sleeping bags, cots, and tents, and set up bathroom facilities at each campsite along the river. Each passenger is expected to assist in loading and unloading the raft at each stop. The group typically forms a fire line and passes equipment and food from the raft to the campsite and back again each day. This group activity quickly helps mold the participants into a team. As the rafts float down the river, the temperature changes abruptly from somewhere over 100 degrees to below freezing. When the rafts are in the sunshine or on a hot day, the heat can become almost unbearable. But when in the shade on a cold day, it can become very chilly. Whether the day is cold or not or hot, the river is always cold, having been described as liquid ice. The water in the canyon comes from Lake Powell and is extremely frigid all year round because it comes from melting snow in Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona. The Colorado River typically runs green when no recent storms have washed muddy brown water from upstream. Because of the cold green water, trout fishing is excellent in most of the canyon. During the 1995 raft trip, I was able to catch about a half a dozen trout, one of which was 21 inches in length. Even when recent storms have muddied the Colorado, the first 80-mile stretch from Lee's Ferry to the Little Colorado River is still and clear and excellent for fishing. However, almost any recent rain in eastern Arizona will cause the Little Colorado River to run brown. When it enters the main Colorado River just east of Desert View Tower, the two flows will run parallel for only a short distance before the entire river turns brown. Fishing under these conditions is poor. Before boarding the raft, we always make one last stop at a sporting goods store for rafters to purchase fishing licenses and equipment. When running the river, each person in the group wears a rain suit and a life vest. The group is instructed in safety precautions should anyone be swept off the raft into the current. If a person falls into the river, he is not to fight the river, but to relax. Keep his head above the water and point his feet downstream. This reduces the likelihood of a luckless rafter striking his head against a rock. Within a few minutes, a person overboard will pass through the rapid and float into the calm water downstream, and the boatman will quickly fish anyone out of the river who may have fallen overboard. Of course, this interval of time may seem like an eternity to the victim, because of the extremely cold temperatures and the fear of rushing water all around. We've had only one passenger fall overboard in the dozen trips we've taken into the canyon. That person was Steven Tecklenburg, whose restraining strap slipped while riding the horn through Lava Chuar Rapid. Steve was rescued within a minute or so of clearing the rapid, cold and wet but unharmed, and loving every minute of it. During most of the rapids, the boatman will allow people to ride on the horn of the outriggers. This is the pointed front end of the rubber tubes which support the edges of the raft. There are straps wrapped around the tubes to hold onto, and this is the best place to experience the thrill of riding the rapids. However, during some of the heavier rapids, like Crystal, Lava Falls, and Sockdolager, the boatman may require all riders to sit inboard. The food and equipment are all stored in the center of the raft and are covered with a tarp to prevent them from getting wet. Around this large pile is a narrow seat on which most of the rafters could sit. There are straps to hold onto, and the ride is much gentler. When entering a large rapid, the boatman will attempt to position the raft just to one side of the main flow, so that the raft will pass through the rapid and not get hung up in the large hole that develops just downstream from the underwater obstacle, which causes the rapid. If the boatman is successful, the raft will fall off the wall of water upstream, drift down one side of the hole, and continue up the downstream wave of water. This not only gets the raft through the rapid safely, but produces a thrill for the riders very much like a roller coaster. In 1995, I attempted to document the transit through Sockdolager Rapid with my 35mm camera. I took a series of photos of two rafters who were riding the Horn. I photographed them from my position in the center of the boat. As we approached the rapid, I took a picture of Linda and Jerry leaning forward, eagerly anticipating the rapid. My second picture was taken after we had dropped off the wall of water into the hole and were just beginning to bounce upward on the downstream wave. The picture shows the Horn bent upward and a curl of water beginning to fall over Linda and Jerry. My third picture, taken about a second later, shows nothing but a wall of water between them and me. More than a dozen large rapids and many dozen smaller ones exist in the Grand Canyon. These rapids occur mostly where the canyon enters the main river. The canyons enter the main river, having brought rocks and boulders downstream and dumping a rock garden in the river. This partial blockage of the river causes the water to be slightly dammed and form turbulent flow over the boulders. In some locations, underwater sills of harder rock, which cross the river at right angles to the flow, will produce small waterfalls and turbulent flow. Daily and seasonal variations in the flow of the river caused by releases from Lake Powell and the accumulation of sand in the channel will rapidly change the characteristic of each rapid. The boatmen must rely on their experience from previous runs through each rapid and a reading of the water to determine the safest path through. Of course, the boatmen want the participants to enjoy their ride down the river, but they don't want to lose riders into the river or upset the raft. It's not uncommon for a boatman to lose a propeller when running a rapid, but rafts are seldom upset. Each raft carries several spare propellers and even an extra motor should they strike a rock on the way through a rapid. Because of the thrilling experiences and new perspectives gained in the canyon, our raft groups have strongly bonded over the years. Several couples have met and married after participating in one of our raft trips. Numerous couples have renewed marriage relationships. Many others have testified to the importance of these trips in developing and consolidating their views on creation and the flood. Perhaps one of the most interesting stories to come from a trip to the canyon was shared by a rafter from one of our early trips. Jack Reinhardt was flying on a United Airlines flight from Los Angeles to Denver when they passed over the Grand Canyon. It's not uncommon for pilots to make an S-turn over the canyon to allow the passengers to see the features of the inner gorge and the side canyons. However, on this day, the pilot was supplementing the view with a discussion of how the canyon had probably been caused, or carved, by a catastrophic flow of water through a break in the Kaibab upwarp near Desert View Towers. He explained how the event may have occurred only a few thousand years ago, not over millions of years, as is commonly taught. Jack recognized this presentation from the lectures he had heard while on a Grand Canyon raft trip 5 years before. When he arrived at Denver, he waited for the other passengers to disembark and stuck his head in the cockpit to inquire of the pilot where he had learned this information. When the pilot turned to greet Jack, he was Wes Eastgate. one of the participants on the same raft trip Jack had taken. They renewed an old fellowship by swapping familiar stories from one of their favorite adventures. Grand Canyon raft trips are more than just adventure and fun. They encourage new fellowships. They develop new appreciation for the truthfulness of God's Word. Enthusiasm for Christian fellowship and witnessing to the world occur naturally in this environment. If you haven't had an adventure in your life recently, maybe this adventure is for you.